30 dead in two mass shootings sparks more debate around white terror and gun legislation. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Find us wherever you get your podcasts, at US of Ed, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. First off, going to talk about these shootings, El Paso and Dayton, Ohio. One right after the other, and this only a week after the Gilroy Garlic Festival. Ed, you've spoken in the past about the disaffection, the hopelessness in some areas of America that lead, along with loose gun laws, to these shootings. Does that apply here?
Well, I think the hopelessness piece does, because when the president acts like somebody else is to blame for whatever misfortune you've had, then you go out and find the person you want to blame. And it might be a group of people in your church. It might be someone in a shopping center, whatever, and your arm. Now, that's not to say there aren't disaffected people in England and in France and Israel and whatever, but they don't have guns. And when Mr. Trump says, well, these people have mental illnesses, let's start with number one. What's your mental illness? If you can't figure out, if you take the guns off the street, people might go batty in conversation on the internet. They kind of might strike somebody. They might even knife one person. But my God, guns that can kill 50, 60 people with one pop, come on, you're a little bit crazy if you think they don't need to be curtailed.
And of course, we can't discount the impact of white nationalism in the El Paso shooting. Dayton, a very twisted individual, but we don't have a clear motive yet. But in El Paso, a clear motive of fighting back against a perceived invasion. The killer's manifesto, it seems, could have come right out of Donald Trump's mouth.
It did. This kind of stoking of hatred is what Donald Trump is all about. And this is what he wants to do because he thinks his people, and by his people he means whites, white supremacists, and some blacks who really don't want want segregation back because they thought black people were better off not mixing with white people, are ready to back his crazy rhetoric. And both sides want guns, as though a gun will convince anybody of anything. I haven't seen a single war where people were convinced of something by a gun in modern times. Surely, back in the days of the Christians and the Muslims and so forth, people changed religions for fear of the consequences. But today, it's not going to happen.
Donald Trump, I think it was on the campaign trail in 2016, said that President Obama at the time and Hillary Clinton couldn't even say the words radical Islamic terrorism and therefore couldn't face the threat. Now, the FBI was underlining, even before the El Paso shooting, domestic terror from white supremacists is on the rise. But not just Donald Trump, not just Republicans. Can white America face radical white terrorism?
Well, radical white terrorism is something that needs to be said. Muslimism and so forth. Sure, we need to speak out about that. But how many people have they killed? Except for 9/11, almost none. And why are all these killers white? Does it mean all white people are crazy or radical? I don't think so. I think what is happening here is that you're made a hero. Just like in the Muslim situations where people say they're going to go with the Vestal Virgins and so forth, if they commit suicide, Trump is presenting the same picture. You're going to be one of my people if you kill some of those people, if you eradicate them. That's what I want to do. That's what I want you to do. If that's crazy, we know the source.
And something Trump cited himself as an issue in El Paso, and I think applies here as well, online extremism. We've seen the shutdown of the digital cesspit 8chan following the El Paso shooting, a deep vein of white supremacy there, amongst other terrors. But with these so-called lone wolves, there are support networks of people encouraged there, in their more and more extreme views.
So they're not lone wolves.
Mm.
These are people, they're in an army, and they've gone out on a mission of reconnaissance, and they found somebody who's dangerous, and so they're going to eliminate them. Their somewhat irrational actions are guided by a rational system of propaganda that they're being fed. And that's the real danger. It won't go away even if the guns go away. It's really scary, and it's too deep to cure now.
And just one more before we move off this. I wanted to talk the psychological effect of living with the fear of an active shooter at the back of your mind. Ed, you might have seen the video this week. Hordes of people fleeing in terror through Times Square after a backfiring motorcycle was mistaken for gunshots. A comment I saw said the same thing happened in a Utah mall recently because a large sign fell down with a kind of bang. And as you know, I was in the States recently, and my partner said the thought was always at the back of their mind. We were only there for 2 weeks. It can't be a healthy way to live for 2 months, 2 years at a time.
No, it can't, and it isn't. And people think, well, my area is safe. Well, people in Dayton thought that. Can you think of a place that's quieter, more white, more American than Dayton, Ohio?
Mm.
El Paso may be a threat. But at a garlic festival in Northern California, most of the people who were shot were white, shot by a white shooter. For what reason? Because they have been crazed. So I think Americans are going to start living in fear. I talked to my brother this weekend, and he said a lot of people are just curtailing trips now simply because they feel that this threat is ongoing.
On to other news, and the Department of Justice is siding with Trump over the House calls for his financial records, indicating the House failed to provide enough justification for their subpoenas. Thoughts, Ed?
None. What would you expect? These are his people. It's his attorney general acting like his attorney. This is unspeakable. The attorney general works for the people of the United States, not for the president of the United States. It's preposterous, ridiculous, and the only way to get rid of him is for people to see what he's done. His tax returns, all this is just opening the door for his malfunctioning.
Also this week, in terms of Trump's finances, the Trump campaign suing California over a requirement to release tax returns if he wants to be recognized as a candidate in 2020. Trump really doesn't want anyone having a look at these tax returns.
Well, maybe he'll be a write-in candidate. California sets the rules in the Constitution as to who votes for what, as long as they don't discriminate on the basis of race. I would imagine Massachusetts, New York, and several other states will follow suit. But of course, Trump's not going to win in those states anyway, so what difference does it make? It only really make a difference in states in which he might win, like Texas. But I think California has also done something that's really quite incredible. You cannot travel to states that have abortion laws that California objects to on a California salary or travel voucher. This puts scientists in a real dilemma. Maybe the best lab is in southern Mississippi or something. They can't go visit it on government funds. I'm talking about U.S. government funds because the state of California administers those funds. They haven't sued on this basis, but I think they might have something on that one.
Mm. Also stateside, immigration officials have performed a series of raids across Mississippi, resulting in 680 arrests in what's been called the largest single-state immigration enforcement action in U.S. history. Are we seeing an escalation in the war on illegal migrants as long as the wall remains a pipe dream?
Well, they must have picked Mississippi because it's the only place that has jails available for these migrants. But if the United States wants to lose its food supply, raid all these houses where they butcher cows and pigs and so forth. And then not only do we have the Chinese to deal with, we haven't got anything to export to the Chinese. If American workers wanted those jobs, the illegals wouldn't be in them. So I think this is really just another show. It doesn't mean a damn thing. Nobody in Mississippi is affected by this one iota.
And in Venezuela, new sanctions targeting any company or individual doing business with Maduro's government. A significant escalation, but experts are saying it won't work. What's happening?
Well, it won't work because most of their imports and exports go to other Latin American countries and not to the United States. Most U.S. companies, quite some time ago, when the previous president was in, really they turned their companies over to local manufacturers, local investors, and left Venezuela. So there isn't much American money in Venezuela. So this means really, really nothing. And I'm planning my vacation to South America, but Venezuela, believe it or not, is not on the list.
And Ed, we're doing something different over the next few weeks. It's a bit of a slow news period, and we thought we'd investigate some of the Democratic candidates for 2020, the presidential candidates, a little bit more closely. Starting this week, Cory Booker. Ed, you said last week the Democratic field is moving left. Where is Booker in terms of the field right now?
Well, the field is pretty far to the left, but he's in the center of that field. He's not the farthest out there. He's in the middle, and he's always been in that place. He's not a new lefty. He has been there since high school. He's kind of a favorite son, in a sense. He didn't come up in the ghetto or anything like this. His father was one of the first executives at IBM. I believe his mother was a school teacher. He went to Stanford University, got a master's at Stanford, and subsequently a law degree at Yale. But all this time, he was progressive and very progressive in all the movements that were going on in his time. And he's opposed practically every war and the like. But he has never been an outright socialist. He's not in the Bernie camp. He does believe in universal health care, but kind of an expansion of the existing system of the Obamacare. He believes in women's rights. He's a vegan, so he doesn't kill much of anything. He's a single guy. I think there was one single president, I can't remember, maybe it was Van Buren or somebody like that, but there haven't very many single presidents. But he stepped up his dating game, I saw on the internet, so maybe that'll be cured before there's an election. At any rate, I'd say he's a center lefty. He's an incredible debater. He has a huge vocabulary, which is used like a whiplash. Particularly on his colleagues in the Senate. So Cory is no one to be confused with Miss Muffet. He's a tough guy. He's an athlete. And I think he's gaining traction, not necessarily for the presidency, but for spokesperson for the Democratic Party.
And just circling back on El Paso, he's been one of the strongest Democrat voices talking gun control and legislation to fight white supremacy this week, said there is no neutrality in this fight. You're either an agent of justice or you are contributing to the problem. Surely a good issue for him to be taking a stand on right now.
It is. It is. And this is where he wants to stay. He'll stay with guns, health care, and social progressive issues all the way through and against military intervention. So that's him. You're not going to get any more, any less. But he's not going to nationalize companies. He's not going to be for reparations for African Americans. He is just a nice center lefty.
And just as a final point, I mean, looking in the crystal ball, this is a long race. A lot of things could happen. We've seen an eloquent, pretty good-looking black guy take the lead amongst established candidates before in terms of presidential candidates. But right now, sitting right now, is he a good candidate for VP or perhaps in 2024, 2028?
Well, I think we're talking about 2028. Maybe 2024. You know, if Biden or whoever the candidate is goes down, he would certainly be a popular candidate because he's really laying long pipe in this race. He's not doing anything radical. He's not trying to go out and make headlines. He's staying with his issues. So I think he's 49 years old. He's got time on his hands. And he has a very sound record that he can run on.
US of Ed is produced in the studios of 2SER in Sydney. Help support the work we do by going to 2SER.com/support. Ed and I will be back next week to talk the latest in US news and politics. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and show us some love on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed.